Jai Ma. So I am just reading the subject. Holding the flame, staying true in times of turbulence. Okay. So we need to understand what really turbulence is about. And if we really look at human history, it's very interesting. Turbulence has been studied in several ways by different people. But basically, it goes to one short truth that times are never the same always. Times are changing, to use the modern song. But times are never the same. Now, this has been understood in several ways. So, there are people who describe time as a wave which rises and falls, or is a snake which is moving in a serpentine manner. In India, we have the image of the Sheshnag. So, Sheshnag, as it, on its one of its hood, there is earth. And when it changes from one to another, there is a lot of chaos and collapse which takes place. And it is very fascinating if we study our own life, or the life of a collectivity, or the life of a nation, or the life of the earth, we will see this happening. This is not something new. And we think it's in my life it is happening. We have a tendency, everything we associate everything as if it is happening in my life. But actually, time moves like that. Its motion is rising up and falling down. Whether it's a 7-year cycle, 12-year cycle, 20-year cycle, or at a national level, 200-year-old cycle, all this can be a subject of study. But the question is, why does it move? Now people study it, and they have a lot of pandits earn a lot of money because of this profession. Times change. So it's very interesting. I've actually seen, sometimes they say it is because Rahu Kal is going on. Sometimes it is Shani Kal which is going on. And they do pujas. All right, nothing wrong. Each one's own belief. So as they do the puja, by the time they finish the puja, I've seen actually 2 years, 3 years, anyways your times are going to change. So we are missing some secret out there. People study palmistry, they do numerology, but none of this gives us the real secret. Why there are moments when there are smooth, relatively smooth, earthly life cannot be absolutely, but relatively smooth period, and any of us can actually observe our own life. And there are times when there are rough periods. This cannot be denied. This is a basic observation. So when we use the word times of turbulence, and when we look at this whole things which are changing, and if we go to the heart of the matter, not these peripheries, palmistry, numerology, astrology, these are periphery. They are only notations. They are not the bosses. They just obey the orders. There's a very nice, Shobindo's Ilion starts with this assembly of the gods. So gods have assembled together, and they are discussing what next. So Zeus, who is equivalent to our Indra, I'm sure he won't take offense. So he says that, look here, now we have to enter into a new cycle, and in that new cycle, Troy has to be raised to the ground. Now Troy is a mighty civilization. It is developed in every way. If you read, compare King Priam with all of them, they will look like brutes. King Priam is so sophisticated in every way. So much so that before the war begins, he calls to the assembly all the chieftains, and all of them give their opinions. And at the end, King Priam calls Helen, who has run away with his son. And he asks, what do you say? And he doesn't ask her whether we should fight or not. He says, do you still love my son? She says, yes. He says, then we will have the war. War for love. Just imagine. That's the only question he asked. So in that, the gods above, there's a scene going on, assembly of the gods, and all the gods have done their saying. Then Zeus passes the decision. Last goddess is Ananke. She covers her face always. And when all the gods have gone, he has taken a decision. He says, whether you are on this side or that side doesn't matter. This is going to be the war and this is going to be the fate. Already decided. So now they have to comply. And it's shown that how some of their the whole age is changing. Athene is now going to take the lead. And some of the gods who were very nice and they had very good followers, now they have to go back into the background. This you will see. People don't understand how Indian civilization, whatever happened. And everywhere you see that. Now we see that happening in Iran, America, everywhere. So there are rough times and there are smooth times, relatively smooth times, let's call it like that. So there is a secret here. What should we do in times of turbulence? Many people get caught in the waves. So they start discussing, holding meetings, they start cursing, blaming. The worst thing to do is curse and blame because that doesn't help us. They get into fights, quarrels, and they are more and more dragged and sucked into it. And at the end, there is a period when this will be over. At that point where you have reached, that's all that matters. You may be lying on the ground or you may be uplifted to the skies. So what should we do during those times? We have to understand these times have come with a purpose. So they come with a purpose, and the purpose is precisely to shake us up. Mother has used the word hour of God. So they come to shake us up, to wake us. So first God gives us an alarm, little alarm, wake up call. When we don't listen to the wake up call, then there is a shake up call. If we don't listen to the shake up call, there is a break up call. See, that's how he does. So wake up call is given by Brahma, nicely, creation. You know, you are asked to create something new, beautiful. It's a wake up call. And then comes a little bit shake up. See how Vishnu Bhagavan comes, avatar, and shakes everything and puts it. If you don't do it, then we have the story of Daksha Prajapati and Shiva. The breakup. He comes and destroys the whole yagya. Shiva Bindu quotes this story. And this is what runs in everybody's life. But what happens, the saddest part, at least I'm sure all of us are aware, I have observed in so many lives, sitting on this side, and in our own lives, that when there is a relatively smooth period, then we miss the moment. It's a paradox. See, there's a nice little line by one of the mystics. I think it is Kabir. He says, "Dukh me sumiran sab kare, sukh me kare na koi. Jo sukh me sumiran kare, to dukh kahe ko hoy." He says, when there are times of distress, everybody remembers. But if people could remember thee, O Lord, during times of happiness, there would not be a shadow of sorrow ever. This is beautifully portrayed in one of these stories in the Bhagavat where Kunti, each one narrates when Krishna is going. Kunti says, "I have one prayer to you. Please give me sorrow and suffering. Because if I look back at my life, they are the only periods when I have remembered you." And I am sure that in most people's life it works like that. When there is a danger, difficulty, sorrow, sometimes in anger, doesn't matter. Beauty is God doesn't take offense. We are remembering God. At the end of the day, we are saying, "Why are you doing this to me? Why?" We are remembering God. But of course, this is not the best way to remember. But we remember God. But when life is smooth, then we are also, thank God, let's enjoy. Mother at one place says that we often say that pleasure is a blessing, happiness is a blessing. She says it is very deceptive. Because more often than not, we forget the divine at that point of time. We are just busy running, jumping around, but invariably the second period will come. And it has nothing to do with sins and this and that. They are cycles of time. So there will be a time when things will be very turbulent. They will be broken up, shaken up. And that is the time we most remember. We try to understand. We look within. Whether we like it or not, we reflect. What's going wrong? Why things are happening the way with whatever way, 100 ways we try to navigate through those difficult times. And yet they don't leave us. It's not like just because we have reflected. It'll go on for some time. After that, for strange, inexplicable reasons outwardly, suddenly things become smooth. Now this is a time window. It's a window given to us. And it applies at every level. It applies at collective level, individual level, national level, world level, everywhere. It's a window given to us when we can now reflect on the real causes. And based on that, we take the forward leap. We can look back quietly, see that, look, where is it that we are, where is the problem really lying within us, not problem outside us. And we can take a leap. See, 1960, I think Yuthant was that time the Secretary General of the United Nations. He made a very strange observation. He says that, well, if as long as humanity remains what it is, it will keep on fighting, and probably it is time to change humanity. And if that is required, I think we should do that. Strange, prophetic words flowing from inside. Well, nobody listened. That's a different story altogether. But if you look at the way the world is going and individual life, this process is going to become more and more intense. And while it may look like a pressure of circumstances or situations, developing situations, deep within it is the crisis of consciousness. Shobindu pointed it like, you know, Brahma, the new creation is coming. In 1914, no, not 14, but he started writing The Life Divine. So somewhere maybe around 16 or 17, this passage he must have written. That, you know, we are living in times when there is going to be upheavals. And there is a great crisis which is going to come up. And this crisis ultimately is one of those waves which can completely destroy us or rebuild us. And Mother spoke about it. And we don't have to worry about the means of destruction. Plenty are there. But the new creation, very few people know about it. So especially for us, those who are connected with the Mother and Sri Aurobindo, I think there is only one particular thing we should keep in mind and aspiration, that which is the hope. And that hope is the new creation. Frankly, if human beings remain what they are, or what we are, okay, let's put it like that, driven by ego and desire, whatever we may do, we may make very nice systems, but these systems are not going to last. And I'm reminded of this before the new creation thing in 1926. Now this is the 100th year actually of this event, which the event of, you know, overmind creation was, had manifested. All the gods were manifesting in the disciples. And Mother goes to Sri Aurobindo and says that the gods have agreed and they are ready to manifest in the disciples. And overmind creation had been brought down to earth. Sri Aurobindo just looked at her and says, no. It will make a very big religion, very something stupendous as earth has ever seen. But it will not be forever secure. After some time, this will go down. This is what we see. Whether it be in India, whether it be now America or any other place, Europe. So there will be a rise, something very nice, and then it will fall down, collapse. And then the mother says, I understood in my inner consciousness. She completely removed all of that and the process of the new creation started. So the solution that Mother and Sri Aurobindo have given us is not political, is not democratic, it's not dictatorial, it's not this, that. Any human solution we have tried for ages and failed. And I think if we don't understand this, we are truly not ready for this great yoga which they have brought to earth and man. It is only and only the change of consciousness, the change of humanity. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says, Mother's message is there, the future of the earth depends upon a change of consciousness. And the change is bound to come, this is the assurance. But it is left to men to decide whether they will collaborate for the change or the change is thrust upon them by the power of crashing circumstances. So I personally feel, I have got a few passages which I want to read from Mother's writing, that we should pay attention to those times when life is smooth. Because when life is turbulent, we will anyways look inside, we'll be compelled to look inside. But we don't pay attention to times when everything is smooth. We take it for granted. There are very nice things about it which have been written in poetry, but I don't want to get into that because that. So there are several things from the Mother's writings which show us the way. And of course, the hour of God is there. So it can give us a leap, these moments, or they can collapse us. And this is a message of the Mother. She says, difficult hours come to the earth. See, no Rahu Ketu, forget about that. It's just a waste of time. They are attendants. They are only managers. If you go to a manager, what will he say? If his boss has taken a decision, is he going to reverse it? No, he may take some money from you, saying that I am going to reverse it. And then he will say, sir, file is still there, 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 there. Finally, at some point, the file will come out and he will take the credit. So let's not talk about the managers and the middlemen. And that applies to pandits and priests and everybody. They are there. That's why Kala is known as the ultimate of God and Kali is the final one. She drives the movement of time. And we have Bhadra Kali and Rudra Kali. So there are moments when she drives, the time goes smoothly, and there are moments when she wants us to take a leap. So the Mother says, difficult hours come to the earth to compel men to overcome their small personal egoism and turn exclusively to the divine for help and light. Now this is during difficult hours. But what I was mentioning, which I have seen very often, when things are smooth, we once again disengage. We go about life in the usual way, and just the normal way, as if everything is fine. It won't last. It's not about being good or bad. It's not about karma. Forget for a moment all these things. I mean, people often say, why good things happen to bad people? They happen to bad things happen to good people. They happen to everybody. It's not only bad. Nobody is pointed out. So I'm talking of the deepest truth here. Not, okay, you can analyze and understand or have the intuition about it. But point is that these things happen to everyone. The Mahabharata came to everyone. Which side one chooses is the main thing. And this choice is what is going to determine our future destiny. The wisdom of men is ignorant. Only the divine knows. So people who hold meetings, they try to find ways through human discussions. This is such a waste of time. So people don't even understand the problem. And if they understand the problem, they don't know the solution, because the problem is ego. How are you going to solve the problem of the ego? You may say, let's have a meeting, let's sign the minutes. But that's not the problem. Problem is ego. Problem is desire. Whether we like it or not, this is the problem. And then the Mother says, this is a conversation about the world situation. Finally, I am fully convinced that the confusion is there to teach us. Teach us what? Who is bad? Who is good? No, this is a waste of time. Teach us how to live from day to day. That is to say, not to be preoccupied with what may happen. Every thought is lending energy to the future. And at one place, mother said, we must be willing optimist. And to me, the root of this optimism is faith in the divine grace. As simple as that. Either the divine exists or doesn't exist. Now, I'm not talking of the witness Purusha as someone who exists. If the divine exists, there always is hope. If the divine doesn't exist, whatever means you may apply, it's all meaningless. What does it matter then? Whether you live or die, I mean, it's like... So she says, not to be preoccupied with what may happen. What will happen? Just to occupy oneself day by day with doing what one has to do. Our consciousness gets so much into the past and all the rough things going around. We know that. I mean, humanity has been, let's say, fighting since Cro-Magnon man. It's not news. News is a few people here and there who are having aspiration. That's what will count at the end of the day. There's a very interesting story at the end of the Mahabharata. So when the Mahabharata war is over, all of them are saying, I am the one who killed so many. I am the strongest. And then Barbarik is the one whose head has been installed on a little hillock. He was going to finish everything in two arrows and Krishna beheaded him. Why? Because Krishna is on both sides. It's not like one side is good and one side is bad. There are egoistic people all around and they had to go. So they go and ask him that you have seen. He is blessed to have the vision that you can. He can see everything. What is happening? His head is immortal. So he is like the Rahu Ketu story, but in reverse. It's so his head is immortal and he is watching the whole thing. So he is asked that, what did you see? Who is the strongest of us all? He laughed. And after laughing, he says, well, what can I say? I only saw Krishna in this side and Krishna on that side. So this is the inner truth which we forget. All thinkings, pre-plannings, arrangements and all that, one would expect mother would say, very nice you are doing it, she says, are very favorable to much disorder. Should we not use it? Okay, we use it if we have nothing else, but offer it to the divine. Cling to the divine. That's what she's saying. All that matters is cling to the divine and not to the world as it is. To live almost minute to minute, to be like that, gesture upward. Attentive only to the thing that is to be done at the moment. And then to let the all consciousness decide. We can never know things even with the widest vision. We can know only very partially. By giving great importance to things dangerous and harmful, you only add strength to them. We know in Auroville context, a book had come out or a couple of books had come out, vision gone away. So somebody asked me, I said, all that I know is that which side the man stands. You have to be the divine to foretell all these things. What do you know? You don't know what's going to happen to your life. We can't see beyond the tip of our nose and we are predicting about, you know, what the divine has manifested and is manifesting. So, and then she says, when you are assailed by the vision of such disorder and confusion, you have to do only one thing. To enter into the consciousness where you see only one being. See Krishna on both sides. One consciousness, one power. There is only a single unity and all this is taking place within this unity. You know, sometimes some experiences are imprinted so deeply in you. As a child, I remember going to Kanpur, it's the Yamuna river which flows there. And Yamuna, of course, can suddenly, storms can come, all this. She's a turbulent river because she is sister of Yama. So the sea flows here. So that's why they say that she is the one who tied Rakhi to Yama, and Yama told, okay, today I am not going to those sisters who tie Rakhi to the brother. That's how the story goes. Set for the long life. So I remember such a terrible storm that came. Suddenly, flash storm. What do we do? We are 4 or 5 members. So we just sat, the family members, holding to each other, eyes closed, head down. It's imprinted in my memory. But all that we was doing was, Ramji ka naam lo, Krishna ji ka naam lo. Take the name of Krishna, take the name of Rama. That was the background. And people may say, oh, this is okay, this is nothing. Mother says, when the storm comes, step inside your room. You don't know. You are trying to fight the disorder. You think you are capable. This is the time to get strength. That's how Sri Krishna tells all these people that gather strength at this point of time. Do tapasya. That's how you see 13 years, they do tapasya. They were capable. They could have said, let's plan and fight. So there are moments of preparation and we must not lose them. Good hours are moments of preparation. So these are real things which happen, and these are moments we should not lose in all kinds of speculation. Nothing is going to last forever, this is known. But how we use that particular moment is important. All that is mere nothing, all our judgments, etc. It is microscopic in comparison with the consciousness presiding over all. Sometimes people are so much, their life is so full of themselves. It's all about I, me, my. So I often say, instead of me and my, if you can just say ma, so much better it will be. But life is full of that. Now, you have to remember that given this immensity of the universe, this vision of the vastness, this is a microscopic little straw. Our assessment, our judgments about people, about ourselves, what do we know? This immensity. So she says that therefore, if one had the least sense of the reason why separate individualities existed, one would see that it was only for allowing aspiration, the existence of aspiration. So why, when divine is doing everything, why has he created these individualities? Anyways, he will do. See, this part is very, very true. And if you look at the earth creation, it is a fixed match that we are playing. And I would add the word fortunately. Navjaji used to say this. It is very true. We are all playing a fixed match. It is decided. You want to drop out of the match, your problem. But this creation, its end or whatever way, as a culmination of one important stage, is all decided. That's what we see in Bhavishya Puran when we read all about finally Kalki Avatar and clearing the whole mess and then, Earth becoming safe forever. So all this is already decided. But we as individuals want to do something. We don't want to just sit quietly and be a... So mother says, yes, do something. You don't have to just sitting and watching and feeling, fuming and fretting. What we should do? Why individualities have been created? She will still carve individuals, the divine individuals out of... This has been decided. But what we can do for allowing aspiration, the existence of aspiration, and this is what we see, that during times of crisis we aspire the most. It's, well, fortunate or unfortunate, what shall I say? Of this movement of self-giving, at one point there is a conversation with Sat Prem. He says, when I was outside in the difficult difficulties of the world outside, when everything was so difficult, I remember I used to aspire a lot. Mother says, yes. But when I come here, somehow that aspiration goes down. It is so true. She created all this. At one point, there's a whole conversation where she says, humanity will have to go through very difficult times. And she says, because when everything is provided, human beings become lazy. Because there is freedom, you become licentious. Because freedom is there in ashram, there is freedom. Shobindu was asked that, why have you given such a long rope? so that people can go and hang at the end of it. He says, well, you cannot create Superman without that. This freedom is necessary. So this was the freedom, that if you want, you want the divine or not. Divine is ready to give the new creation. If you want, if people want to waste their time, who is the loser actually? I feel we are the losers if I waste my time. Nobody else loses. I am the loser. So when time is there, given to us, we should use it for the best. And what is best? She says, of this movement of self-giving and surrender. Trust and faith. It can completely change destiny. Even few moments. There is a nice little story in a man had done everything possible. I mean, this is a story. Not that there is a hell where you are sent and punished or heaven. So that's the states of consciousness through which we pass. So there is this man who had done all kinds of stupid things, and he had to go few seconds in heaven and rest in hell. So he was asked, which one you want first? He says, okay, send me to heaven. He goes to heaven. And then what he does is, he starts from that point onwards, he starts remembering the divine and starts giving away everything. See, even the gods, when they start enjoying life, something happens. So read the stories of Indra. He goes into a little leaf, he's lost there. So, but he starts giving, he starts remembering. Now he's accumulating so much merits. That's the childish way to put it, but beautiful way. That now all his hellish things are getting cut. At the end, divine appears before him. So he made the best use of the good moments. But most often we lose that moment. This is the saddest part. So he says, that's why individualities were built up. And then for you to become that in all sincerity and intensity, it is all that is needed. I really feel we make so much hullabaloo about things in life. This is getting lost. Sometimes house is not there. Sometimes I remember when I came to ashram, somebody was telling me this story. Very nice story. He says, when he came, he was looking for a guest house. Now we have everything online. So they said, you are coming, but you can't be sure of the guest house. So he asked a very interesting question. He said, am I allowed to sleep on the seashore? He knew there is seashore. He said, of course, that's your choice. He said, that's it. I don't care. I am not coming for the comfort of the guest house. I am coming there for the divine. As long as I am allowed, I will take anywhere, I will sit anywhere, I'll eat, drink, doesn't matter. So this is the aspiration, this is the self-giving, where nothing else counts. And who can obstruct our giving but ourselves? So she says, it is all that is needed. It is the only thing that stays. All the rest, phantasmagoria. And it is the only thing valid in every case. When you move, when the body is no more able to move. Here in care, old age home is not the right word. But one doctor was there, Dr. Vishwa. I don't know whether any of you have met or not. He was in GH, a local doctor, but completely turned towards Mother and Sri Aurobindo. So at 90s, he was there. He couldn't move much, but he would be reading. So he was sharing this story. Even then he would be reading Mother and Sri Aurobindo. Jugalda, he left everything. When he left his body on Sri Aurobindo's book, suddenly his head is gone down. So inspiring. So he was sharing this story with me. He says, I asked the mother, Mother, I am not capable of doing anything now. So isn't it better that I go back? She says, don't say that. Can you take God's name? He says, that I can do. He says, that's all that is required. Very few are doing this. Very few are doing this. Just imagine. She said, do that. So he says, since then I understood that, okay, if I cannot do anything, I can at least take the name of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. I can read their books. Who can stop us from doing it? And She says, this is so important and there are very few who are ready to do it. So your presence is required, just your presence. Only that. So what is the most important thing for which we have come? To come in conscious contact with the Supreme Consciousness, to be united with it and to wait. So very often when people would come, Ravindraji would tell this story. He said that there are people who come to ashram, I mean, must be the same about Auroville, and they forget why they are here. And even when they come for a few days, they are just busy meeting people, talking to people. That's not what we are here for. She is reminding us what we are here for, connect with the aspiration. Spending a few minutes, maybe a dinner here and there is okay, but what we are here for? So he used to say only stay at the Samadhi ashram, go to the seashore if you like, take a walk there and spend time in quiet contemplation wherever you are. And then you receive the right indication of what you ought to do at each minute. To do or not to do, to act or to be stone still. This is the original answer of to be or not to be. This is the dilemma. So the dilemma is turn toward the divine and go by that. That is all. And even to be or not to be. So see, she has answered the famous Shakespearean question. To be or not to be, as she wills. As she wills. That is the only solution. More and more the certitude is there. This is the only solution. All the rest is mere childishness. Always to reconnect with why I am here. So many times people talk and they come and start discussing this person is doing that, that person is doing that. So my simple take is, why are you here? You are here to connect. This is a lesson you learn, sometimes painfully. So in the ashram, each one learns in their own way. So to me it flashed that, why am I here? I have come here leaving behind everything only to be one with the mother. I said, that's all that matters. All the rest is a waste of time. And each one in his own way. You want to do meditation, you want to do service, bhakti, read, whatever way. It's each one's way. But this is what we have come here. We have left far behind things. And what for? To start a new political organization? It's such a waste. Now others are doing it. Let them do. There is a higher destiny which is looking after. And perhaps if there are many more number of people who are really sincere deep inside, all this will just nightmare will go away. It's precisely because people are so much involved into all these outer things that the inner truth. And all activities, all possibilities can be made use in a very natural way. And I feel like that. This agitation. Oh, this whirl in the atmosphere. She says, poor humanity. Sometimes two words of the mother are so full of. She understands. Always, you know, somebody having problem. People often say such thing. Oh, I could not come because there is a marriage there. Oh, I could not come because these things will go on. The more one gets engaged into it, the more it will pull. This is how the world operates. World operating system, original WOS. World Wide Net. What is WWW? Whatever it means. So, if you start getting pulled, it will pull you more and more and more. At some point you have to say, okay, that's enough. Let me be pulled by the divine. People may say things, they may, you know, it doesn't matter, it becomes irrelevant. So she's saying, all that is for teaching the world to turn back to the Lord in its consciousness. Why? It is for this that there has been a creation, original plan, to turn to the Lord. Whatever one is, with all one's good, bad, defects, everything, turn to the Lord and offer at the feet. But for that, what is required? She points out. But for that, naturally, there should be no more preference, nor desire, nor repulsion, nor attraction, nothing. All that is gone. So what she wants, as thou willest, If you really look at it, her last mantra which she gave, I think 1973, one of the last conversations, is as thou willest. After much struggling, one realizes that all the highest we can imagine will be good is still an ignorance. Because we don't know. We think if this happens, this is better. We really don't know. So, as thou willest comes when there is true humility, true sincerity and complete faith in the divine. As thou willest can be a very morose kind of, as thou willest, what can we do? That doesn't help. It is like a helpless fellow saying, as thou willest. But the day we have complete faith that she knows better than us, our state, that she will do everything much better if we leave it in her hands. Why should we worry? Why should we fear? All worry and fear is a sign of lack of faith. So she says, and above all, no fear. That is the most essential of all things. And truly, if you see what is there, we are afraid of what may happen. We give so much importance to, you know, this may happen, that may happen, life, death, everything. But all that matters is, Sri Aurobindo says in one of the aphorisms, which, you know, often touches so deeply. He says, the only tragedy is to die without realizing your psychic being. All the rest is all on the way, by the way. And she has given all this about men, countries, continent. We know about it, so I'm not reading it. The choice is imperative, truth or the abyss. So we can see that she spoke about fear, she spoke about money, she spoke about distrust, and all that is happening all over the world. So, then for us, she says, when someone has decided to consecrate his life to the seeking for the divine, if he is sincere, that is to say, if the resolution is sincere and carried out sincerely, there is absolutely nothing to fear, because all that happens or will happen to him will lead him by the shortest way to this realization. Nothing outward needs to change. So one of the classic thing is story of Mirabai. She is being asked to get married. She asks one of her friends, what do you say, is it okay that I get married? She says, yeah, my husband is too good. Morning bed tea till night dinner, everything he arranges. So I am free to remember God. She said, this doesn't look right. Something is amiss. So she asks another friend that you tell me what's your experience with marriage. She says, very good. My husband is the most horrible fellow in the world. He doesn't care for me at all. So thank God I can always remember the Lord. So she realizes it doesn't matter. Actually, this is the story of Mirabai. By default, it is showing this. People don't realize. She gets married to XYZ. Rana. But she is always thinking of Krishna. She is married to Krishna. So it doesn't matter. From riches to rags and rags to... It's a beautiful story. I've actually had some living experiences with Mirabai. Been to the place where she had lived in Chittor. And it's so amazing, that atmosphere which is so powerful. Even it's in ruins. The original place. Of course, they kept a little temple. And this is... Yes. Yes. So she has shown the way that one should be, how one should be completely dedicated. It doesn't matter. So when she is given the poison, she drinks that poison happily. Now people don't understand. They think that ultimately it is, they succeeded. See, this is a absolutely wrong understanding that, you know, the her husband was feeling that, what kind of a... He doesn't know what to do with her actually. So he finds a way. He sends her poison to drink. So when she holds in her hand, she knows it is poison. She drinks it smilingly. Now what would have happened behind this, my personal revelation through some personal contact with her. It's not about he sent and he ultimately managed to get his work through. No. What went inside her is Krishna coming and telling her, well, this world doesn't care for you. Come and join me. So she drinks poison and actually fuses in that idol, which I have gone and seen that. She just fuses. For her, it doesn't matter. Life or death is irrelevant. What is important is how much we are one with her. So, that is the response of the grace. So, how does grace work? People believe that the grace means making everything smooth for all your life. It's not true. The grace works for the realization of your aspiration. And everything is arranged. This is so beautiful. To gain the most prompt, the quickest realization. So there is nothing to fear. If the goal is union with the divine, which is what the yoga's goal is, there is everything else. Shobindu extends it to union of matter with divine, which is ultimate. Union of the mind with the divine, so that the mind is transformed into a divine light. Union of the heart with the divine, so that divine love flows. That's what he speaks about. The golden light came down into my mind and into my brain. The grey rooms of mind, sun-touched, became a bright reply to wisdom's occult plane, a calm illumination and a flame. The golden light came down into my speech, throat, and all my speech is now a song divine. So look at it like, ultimately, what is transformation? Union with the soul with the divine is yoga ordinarily, highest. Union of thoughts, mind, so that nothing else comes in the mind except what the divine wants us to think. Nothing else flows out of speech except what the divine wants us to speak. Nothing else flows out of the heart except, you know, that love, divine love. None of those dark emotions, mixed emotions, hate, anger, goes away. It's such a beautiful state. It is surprising that why won't one want it? It gives you freedom to have a heart which is free of hate, jealousies, anger, duplicity. It's such a freedom. Fear comes with insincerity. If you want a comfortable life, agreeable circumstances, etc., you are putting conditions and restrictions, and then you can fear. So always, at least, that, well, people often ask about ashram life, but it has no business in the sadhana. That, well, here we have come for joining with the mother, becoming one with her in every level. Nobody else can come. Fortunately, nobody else can come in the way of that except myself. That's what the Gita says. Atmanev atmano bandhu, atmanev ripur atmana. We are the enemies. Nobody else. There is no enemy outside. People may believe that they are enemies. Well, that's their problem. People may think, oh, Dr. Alok Pandey is the most stupid fellow and, you know, he is my enemy. It's okay. Why should I spoil my own joy with that? And so she speaks of, in the difficult hours of life, what we should do. The imperative duty of each one is to overcome his ego. What happens? Okay, let him overcome, then I will overcome. It doesn't work like that. If you are not meant to overcome, you will not overcome even if the other person has overcome. This is the paradox of life. So, how to overcome? She gives in a total and unconditional self-giving to the divine. Constantly says, this is the short path. Self-giving to the divine. Then the divine will make you do what you have to do. What will happen to us? She says, don't worry about it. It's not your lookout. And actually, it is such a delight. Actually, he's so peaceful that who is looking after me? Divine Mother. Not my physical mother, father. I can share one experience long, long back, but very touching experience. When my physical mother died, this, I think it was 2000. So I just told them, I was there, so I said, okay, prepare the body, called my sister, and I went to a relic center in Bangalore. So just offering her being. As I was offering at the shrine there, I actually heard a voice here. The voice said, "Now I am your physical mother also." I was so overjoyed, and nobody could believe why. People thought, what's wrong with him? He's supposed to be unhappy. Why should I be unhappy? She has gone to mother and mother has taken charge of me physically. I didn't say all this. And trust me, how she does, on a very personal note, that day, even before that, till today, nothing you have to think about, worry about, what will happen to you, how it will happen to you. To hand over one's responsibility to the divine is the most logical and simplest thing to do. And once she says she takes it, then who can take care better? In fact, the lesser the people, the better it is. So the disciple asks that, "I feel completely suffocated. The struggle has become fiercer. How many days must I go on like this?" Mother says, "My dear child, do not lose heart and do not be impatient. These things, they take long. You know, don't you, that our force, our help and our blessings are always with you?" So she would say, "Keep taking interest in the work that you are doing and the difficult hours will pass." There are people who run away. They leave a place, and I feel so surprised that sometimes I feel it tells upon people. If you have lived dedicating your life to the divine truly, you will continue even if death comes, even if everything is taken away from you. Because permanent dwelling place is the divine, none else. If there is no hut above you, then take it that mother is surrounding me, I am living in her. She will provide, always. Even animals are taken care of. What is there? We only have the burden of our... But just this, a faith in the grace or an awareness of the grace, even if you don't have faith, or the intensity of the call, or else naturally the response, the thing that opens, that breaks, the response to this marvelous love of the grace. And you see so many people, there used to be one very elderly man in care, always looking happy, Gobind Bhai. So he would scribble something on the paper and something from the mother, some small, it is scribbling, difficult handwriting. He would pass on to me. We all used to take round, but he would pass on to me. Somehow he'd taken a liking. And something from mother's writing, one sentence, and I would keep it as a blessing. So always, whenever we doctors would ask him, "How are you?" his answer was, "By the grace." And then one day he revealed the secret. I said, "I understand fully, by the grace. But how did you?" He says, "Mother once told that you don't say that I am good. The things which are watching, where is the good fellow?" But the moment you say by the grace, then even if things are horrible, they turn into a passage towards something beautiful. So by the grace. And at the end, we know Hour of God, writing of Sri Aurobindo, that's what I was referring to, that when good times come, it's basically to make sure that we remember more often. We come into contact more often. We don't lose it running here and there. The world is there. It'll go its own way. People will draw, attract, problem, difficulties, and they'll make you feel you are the only one without whom I cannot manage. This is all nonsense. They will manage very well when you're not there. This is the importance of her. And finally, from where we started, the cure, lasting cure, is transformation. Changing government, changing the, what is it called, members, committee. It is not the solution. This is all devices, external, very external. You may change any amount of switches, but there is a problem with the wiring deep inside. You may do. So she says, to relieve is not to cure, to escape is not to conquer, to run away from a problem. So how to go about? She says, only transformation can change the condition of the earth. This is the mother's solution. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Then whether Pralaya comes or this comes or that comes, God knows what comes at the end of the day. A new consciousness, a new force, a new power, bringing to earth a higher equilibrium and a new light, can alone accomplish the miracle of this transformation. But she gives a condition. For that, one must stop being an animal and become a divine man, to become the pure crystal vessel that contains the sacred flame. And then she is asked how to prepare for the hour of God. This is what she has described. She says the best preparation is to be useful to the divine work, to be what mother wants. For everyone to prepare oneself to this transformation, for this transformation. For a very small number to hasten the process of transformation. So this is the condition, and it applies in all situation. And she gives us finally this word of hope. It so happens that we are not in an age when men have been left to their own means. The divine has sent down his consciousness to give them light. All who are able to do so should profit by it. And people forget, so she says, many came attracted by the true thing, but one slackens. In other words, an impossibility to remain firm in one's true position. I have noticed that in the extreme difficulty of the world's external condition, the aspiration is far more intense, because it's a question of life and death. And mother says, that's right, which means that man is still so crude that he needs extremes. That's what Sri Aurobindo said, for love to be true, hate was necessary. True love could be born only under the pressure of hate. That's it. It is probably why there are so many difficulties. So at the end of the day, that's what is being given to us. So everything is a grace. When things are going topsy-turvy, it is a grace, often a much bigger grace. Because when fixed positions are shaken, then we have a chance to rebuild life. There's a very nice two lines which from one of the poets, our good friend Chotanarayan Sharma used to, some of us may have heard, I don't know, now he's. So he used to quote from a poet. So he would say, it's in Urdu, Sab nakhat ama ke doob gaye, sara akash tumhara hai. Nakhat is all the stars and the constellations. So all the stars and the constellations in the universe have sunk. What is that moment? That's the moment when it's thick of the night, dense night, and sun is yet to rise. So therefore he invokes the sun and says, now come, it's your hour. So when everything is taken away from us or is being taken away, it's a grace. When everything is being given to us, it's a grace. So ultimately, that's what she is teaching us. Mother's teachings is so simple. It's to live by the grace, to surrender to the grace, to give oneself to the grace, give one's beautiful things, give one's difficult moments. Give when everything is going smooth, give when everything is going difficult. Give your riches, give your rags, give your goodness, give whatever is so-called sinful in us. And that's the life she has shown us, the path of self-giving. Okay, Jai Ma. I don't know if there are questions, most welcome. I just shared what I felt would work.
It's very interesting when you start talking about God. This morning I wrote, one day your story, when you tell about the group, it's very, very interesting.
Yes. Yes, when situations outside are difficult, it's always to, it is pushing us to turn within. Only unfortunately, when things are good, we don't turn within. That's the sad part. We just take life as it is flowing. We are happy, we are smiling, we are, nothing wrong with that. One should be happy, even in most impossible situations. That's my choice. I mean, to be happy is our choice. Nobody can take it away from us. Situations is whatever be, I mean, destiny, forces, fate, whatever it is. But to be happy or not. And the source of happiness is the divine presence. One is never alone. This idea that one is alone. In fact, when we are most alone, then we are most nearest to the divine presence. Okay. Thank you so much, Jayama.